We'll just have a moment of silence. And now I'd like to read this first verse of this hymn we used at Vespers as kind of the prayer, okay? Because Sister Gabrielle was very dedicated to church unity. And she really gave her life for church unity. And anyway, she's had a tremendous influence in the order, and I think within the churches, just a sense of, as a very young person giving her life. She developed tuberculosis and died. But they said that just how it all unfolded, it was clear that she was making a sacrifice of her life. Anyway, let's just have a moment of silence. Look, Lord, in mercy, as we pray, on tasks as yet undone. Fire us anew to seek the day that makes our churches one. Heirs to one work of grace divine, one spirit freely given, one pledge in sacrament and sign, one cross, the hope of heaven. The following presentation, which I'm pleased to offer, and I hope it will be helpful to you. The following is on the Experientia program, as it was experienced at Gethsemane this past year, and how it might serve to deepen your own experience of the Cistercian charism in your own lay Cistercian program that Mike Johnson has worked so hard on. What I hope to do here is share with you something of how the Gethsemane community responded to the project and what may be helpful toward refreshing your own spiritual lives as associates of Gethsemane. Lest I try to cover too much material in this presentation, I thought to touch on just the first five units of the program. And if this is helpful to your in your groups, I will work with the last five units at a later date if you want a further presentation. In the foreword to the Experientia program, Dom Amon Fitzgerald sums it up in a couple sentences. It is aimed, he says, at enabling monks and nuns of today to reflect on their lived experience of monastic life, and then to confront that experience with texts chosen from the Cistercian and monastic tradition. In this way, the long experience distilled in our tradition can shed light on our present day experience and offer us encouragement, motivation, and direction in living the Cistercian grace in our contemporary world. End of quote. From all that I have heard, it seems the program has done just this, offering many monks and nuns and their communities encouragement, motivation, and direction in our life today. I've seen this happen in my own community here at Gethsemane. Starting about a year ago, we took one unit a month, reading the different selections offered in the unit twice, with 2 or 3 weeks between each reading in the refectory during the noon meal. Then in small groups, we dialogued on that unit. Originally, after the small group dialogues, we came together as a community and each group gave a report on what went on during the time of personal sharing. The difficulty of giving such reports, covering what went on in the small groups with a limited time to report, led to our dropping these community reports and staying with the small group sessions alone. This ended up allowing more freedom in the small group sessions, with the result of greater honesty and openness. There was something about reporting before the whole community where people experienced not being clearly or rightly represented in things they said. And that made a number of people feel uncomfortable. We did have the groups change their participants each time with each unit dialogue. So that each of the monks became better known by all the community. So each time we had these small group dialogues, we had a different group that you were interacting with. And the idea was to, so that we get to know one another better and be able to share on that personal, more personal basis with each other. The openness and honesty of these small groups of 7 or 8 monks was some of the most refreshing experiences of community sharing that many of us have had over the years. The Experiencia program has led both to greater appreciation of one another and the way of life to which each of us has been called. Michael Casey, as you may remember if you read the text from the original document, Michael Casey does a wonderful job at the beginning of the program of giving us the main objectives for which it was undertaken. The first he gives is that it is, quote, to help you help us to reflect on our own monastic experience and to find words to express what you have experienced during the time of your monastic life. End of quote. Many of us in the monastic life, as I am sure in your own living of the Christian life, don't always take the time to reflect on our lived experience. We have a strong tendency to want to get things done, to meet expectations of fellow monks, of family, or of co-workers in a business venture. And I just don't think, we reflect enough on our personal experience, and I guess feel the confidence we need to share that with those we love or are close to. I think to be able to articulate, our experience in a very personal way can be something very dynamic. Michael Casey is clear about the importance of taking time with the program. Quote, for the program to bear fruit, it will be necessary for each monk and nun to invest a good amount of time in formal reading and reflection. It is not a matter of getting each part of the program finished as quickly as possible so that other tasks deemed more important may be undertaken. The optimal way of deriving fruit from the program is not merely to dedicate a period of time to it, but to live with the questions throughout the day, pondering them in the heart, allowing them to serve as a background and a context for lectio, prayer, and liturgy. As we all know from experience, insights may occur when we are doing something else, at work, at leisure, even as we rest. Now again, an important thing of taking time. Most of us are very practical people. We like to get things done and move on. And there are times, though, I think, when we really want to be just quiet and centered in a good sense. What Casey is reminding us of is how the working of grace takes place. It is when we have deeply engaged some aspect of the spiritual life and then allowed ourselves to have some empty space that God speaks to us. It's all about taking the time to develop interiorly sensitive hearts, allowing the Christ who lives within to speak intimately in the depth of our being. Living with the questions throughout the day, as Casey suggests, was one of the ways here at Gethsemane we encouraged personal reflection and sharing as came out in the small group dialogues. And it comes to mind as I'm reading this, you know, having read the unit in the refectory and then reading it again after 2 or 3 weeks, the whole idea was to get us to spend time with what that unit was about and the questions it raised. At the beginning of each unit of the program, there are a group of questions. In preparation for the dialogues, we asked each group to focus on what our dialogue committee thought to be the most helpful of these questions. For example, on the second page of Unit 2, there was the question, "What was I seeking in coming to the monastery? What have I found in the monastery that I was seeking? What have there been pleasant surprises? Have there been moments of grace? Have there been periods of decline?" This is clearly not a one question, but a series. So we used only the first two parts of this, which led to some very personal thought and comment that encouraged all who listened. So we touched on, what was I seeking in coming to the monastery? And what have I found in the monastery that I was seeking? Anyway, those, if we really, you know, let ourselves explore that kind of question, it's amazing what begins to come up. And I think it's true in your own lives, in terms of your own personal experience. Having participated in a number of your own group sessions or discussions, I have been pleasantly surprised how personal you all can be. And I've noticed how life-giving this is to each of the groups. This does mean becoming vulnerable, allowing oneself to be possibly misunderstood or misrepresented. But I think this is the risk we need to take if the action of grace in our lives is going to touch that of others. Dialogues will disintegrate if we get into comparing ourselves to others or with others, or trying to excel in the group. On the other hand, it is amazing what can draw out from what we can draw out from one another if we are sensitive and open to the divine working in their lives, especially as they articulate their own experience. The question you might ask in your own lives, similar to the one asked above by monks and nuns, would be, what was I seeking as a Christian? What was I looking for by desiring to become a lay Cistercian? What have you encountered on a visit or a retreat at Gethsemane that is valuable for your daily living? I must admit, I was a little surprised when I heard from my fellow monks what they were seeking in coming to the monastery. While it may have been very different from what drew me those years ago, it was clearly God's way of drawing this person into the path that leads to communion with the divine. And it can be amazing how God works in subtle ways in each of our lives. You know, God works with what he or she's got. and it's amazing how that can all fit in God's plan. It can be a wonderful experience to see how God works in different lives, adjusting to each person's unique background and leading us all to a sharing in divine life. As awful as the pandemic has been for many families, I have a sense that our common suffering is bringing us closer together, giving us a new appreciation of one another that is so easily lost in the workaday world. The way to move beyond the pandemic will be a collaborative work of letting go of our particular interests for the sake of bringing about some large-scale shifts in how our society functions. As so many of you are more aware than I am, happiness in family life will depend on sensitivity to one another's needs. I see this happening again and again in my own community life. The basis of it all, it seems to me, is the very life God of God as Holy Trinity, where God is one and yet three divine persons. Let me move on to Unit 4 of the program and questions that are asked there. One is the most fundamental of all. Who am I? If I am not my thoughts, my feelings, or troubles, from what sources do I draw elements of my identity? Family, education, friends, experiences, vocation, position in the community? Then it moves on to ask how my experience of self is illuminated by the traditional doctrine of our having been made in the image and likeness of God. Needless to say, these questions caused a lot of reflection and share and sharing in our small dialogue groups. In a world where wealth and power are so often decisive in how one evaluates oneself, our monastic experience highlights an entirely different perspective. For so many of us, in the monastery, it has been our faith experience that opened our eyes to who we are as children of God, made in God's very own image and likeness. I've lost the screen. Are you all still there?
Yes.
Okay, I don't know what happened at my end, but I can't see any faces. That's all right. For so many of us in the monastery, it has been our faith experience that opened our eyes to who we are as children of God, made in God's very own image and likeness. Anthony Gilson has a wonderful book on the theology of Saint Bernard, where he developed Bernard's understanding of our having been made in God's image and likeness. And I know this book was very formative in my own experience. Through sin, we lost our likeness, but through a slow process of conversion, it is regained. The image of God in us is never lost, but it is fully realized only as we let our likeness to God shine through every fiber of our being. Thomas Merton developed a whole spirituality around his understanding of the true and false self. Jim Finley, in his book, Palaces to Nowhere, writes all about this inner journey of Merton, a journey that went on throughout his life. What I have come to see is that getting in touch with this inner tension, the division within us of the true and false self, is the path to freedom. We talk so much about freedom in our U.S. society and within the church, but do we really know what we are talking about? I was asked to be the principal celebrant at the Eucharist yesterday morning, which was the memorial of Saint Anselm. The gospel for the day was from St. John, where he says, "The wind blows where it wills, and you can hear the sound it makes, but you do not know where it comes from or where it goes. So it is with everyone who is born of the Spirit." End of quote. The life of St. Anselm, as I read it carefully in Butler's Lives of the Saints, the new version of Butler's Lives of the Saints, was full of unexpected movement. And for me, he is an example of what real human freedom has to show us. Jesus, as presented by John chapter 3, 7 to 15, reveals to us what finding the true self really means. It is all about being born of the Holy Spirit, the free gift of God at work in each of our lives, if we are interiorly attentive. It is so easy for all of us to want to program, to determine God's presence and action in our lives. God has something much more creative in mind. Unit 4 has a sermon of Isaac of Stella, one of the early Cistercian fathers, and a favorite, I think, of our Father Elias, who has a commentary before the actual selection from Isaac of Stella. I had difficulty at understanding what he was getting at. You would think by now, and being formed by this Cistercian tradition, I could just move right in on this stuff and understand it, but not so. But as I took the time and had read through Father Elias's commentary earlier on, the sermon began to open up for me. Isaac talks about demons, and most of us are not at ease with this kind of language when looking at forces guiding our own lives. We are all inflicted by various thought patterns or human desires that undermine our spiritual interests. We must struggle with them, and there is no way around this. However much we want there to be a simple way out. What I have learned is that in this very struggle is where we truly learn the meaning of faith and what it is to really trust in God. We talk a lot about faith and trust, but the actual exercise is much more demanding, a matter of life and death. Our real enemies are not at all where we usually think them to be. They are all those things that draw us away from relying on the living God, that keep us from opening our hearts to the life-giving Spirit. I wanted to write a final paragraph, but I had to do some revision of what I've presented and didn't get to it. But all the main thing I wanted to say is I do think that with the experience of the lay Cistercian life that Mike Johnson has worked on, I do think that there's a lot there that can be used by each of your groups in a way that we've used the Experiencia program in our monasteries. But the main thing is for each group to deal with the questions in a personal way, to allow yourselves to take the time to really reflect interiorly on the questions, and then to be able to share that personal experience with one another. Thank you for your patience and for your listening.